This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, and thanks for downloading the Scotland Outdoors podcast. I'm Helen Needham. It was about a year ago now that I found myself knee-deep in the waters of South Uist with forager Fee Bird.
We're on South Glendale Beach on the Isle of South Uist, and we're looking across the hills and the houses over there. That's Eriskay, which you can see the causeway.
Yeah.
And this is a tidal beach. So we're fortunate that we can walk here, because if you come down at certain times of the day, there's sea.
Well, there was earlier actually when we arrived, and we've been picnicking ever since. And I'm just enjoying looking at the remnants of what the sea's left behind. I can see some spoots or razor clams.
Yep.
And what kind of shells are those?
Those are cockles. And so if we'd come down with a garden fork and done some raking, it's a great activity to do with kids, we could have had cockles for tea. The spoots are a bit more difficult.
And the cockles, we basically just dig them up then? What's the technique?
Dig them up. Well, rake them up, put them in a bucket, and then give them a good wash, and then put them in a pot of boiling water. Or you can grill them if you want. But basically, if they don't open, you don't eat them. Well, you certainly don't go hammering away to open them. Yep.
So. It's just an absolutely stunning environment. We've had sunshine, and there's still some blue sky, and the colour of the sea, it's a pale, pale turquoise, and this sand is almost silvery.
It's beautiful, isn't it? When we get a little bit further out, we can look for some keyhole marks on the sand, and you'll find some people will come down and sprinkle salt over the keyholes to try and entice the spoots up. But further out here, well, we'll just see if we're lucky or not.
Okay. And is this a place that you come to often?
Yes. It's my favourite beach on South Uist, so now everyone's going to come here. I think what I love about it is in the summer when, you know, if we do have to do a little bit of wading out to get some of the seaweeds further out on the rocks, it's warm. It's I just find it incredible that one moment this is covered by the sea and a few hours later we can walk down here.
And there's lots of goodies to be harvested.
Absolutely. Once I've been caught out by the tide. But obviously when you are foraging on a tidal beach, it's a good idea to ask some local knowledge. I was around the back of that rock in the far distance, and the sea comes in at an interesting angle, and all of this was covered, but fortunately I could get back along the rocks at the top. So that's something...
Sort of scrambling required.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you do go spooting, it's quite a good idea to get one of the spoot shells and mark where the sea is,
clever.
And then you can just glance back and see what it's up to.
Yeah.
Whether you're going to have to do a quick run back.
Yeah, because you're right, the tides, they work in interesting ways, don't they?
But why I love this beach is even if I do get caught out, we're talking inches.
Okay.
You know, so I kind of think, yeah, I'll just get wet. The dog, as she gets older, she's not quite so keen on swimming.
You got into foraging when you moved to South Uist because your husband is the GP here.
Yeah, I'd always been a keen forager. My grandmother taught me to sort of lift up and look under, you know, not just to open your eyes. As a child, I mean, we'd go blackberrying and we'd go picking sticks for her cottage fire. But when Stephen came here, well, there aren't any trees and there aren't any hedgerows.
Were you a bit taken aback?
Well, I was. I wasn't quite sure. I did find some elderflowers, but then I found out that the trees had been planted. Well, there was a very kindly gent and he said, oh, you can pick some. But there weren't enough to, I don't know, you know, a little here and a little there. And why do I want to forage elderflowers on South Uist? There's lots of meadowsweet. So that's when I discovered seaweed. We're making for that rock over there.
Which one? There's a few.
The biggest. Yeah. And, yeah, see, I didn't really know a lot about seaweed. I knew about carrageen. And I think I was attracted to dulse, which I saw storm cast dulse on the west side, which was on the growing as an epiphyte on kelp because it was so beautiful. And I wouldn't recommend this on other beaches, because you need to be cutting the seaweed that you're going to use in the kitchen. You're not going along the beach and just picking up seaweed and cooking with that. But I did cook with the storm cast dulse. And I found that it would cook it. Yeah, I cooked it with potatoes. I think that was one of the first combinations. And it would cook in about the same time as my tatties. So I had a sea and a terrestrial veg in the same pot. And you know, once I started, I got rather enthusiastic, over-enthusiastic with the kelp stipes. I found a youngish one and I put it in a pressure cooker for 45 minutes and then I pickled it and it did taste okay, but I don't think it's really worth the bother.
Right.
So, I'm just wondering how far out we're going to get.
I don't mind getting a bit wet.
So if we're going to go and try and get the sea spaghetti, we need to do some wading.
That's okay.
But as I've done this a few times, what we need to do, instead, the obvious thing is to walk straight to the rock.
Yeah.
But that's quite deep. So okay. What we're going to do is we're going to go up here and then right angle across. Because
I can see the logic there, just the way that tide's moving.
You can see, yeah. It's love the squelch.
Yeah.
You can see all these cockle shells.
Yeah, they're everywhere, aren't they?
And further up by the hill there, you can find little tiny cowrie shells.
Oh.
If you've got time.
Yes.
I think it's interesting, when Stephen first took the practice over, I was always finding cowries, and now it's more difficult. And
then the jellyfish. Ooh.
Interesting one. I found a blue one the other day. But there's also something called sea rocket, which you can eat it, but it's quite a strong taste. It has a very pretty mauve flower, and it was growing all over the place. And now, when I see it, well, I've already said it doesn't taste that nice, but I don't want to pick it because there's not as much of it there as there was 6 years ago.
Oh, really? Why do you think that is?
I haven't a clue. It's just, I suppose the more you get outside, you kind of take things for granted. And then suddenly, when I must have been looking for it one day and it just wasn't there.
Hmm.
I just, who knows what influence that is.
But you're just more observant of the environment, perhaps.
Hopefully.
Yeah. I'm just looking at this seaweed because this, we've got a little rock here.
Yeah.
And this is the kind of seaweed that you would find on any beach. What is this?
If you'd come to this rock a few months ago, this would have been green. This has been sunbathing. This is serrated wrack. And you see there aren't any bladders on it.
Yeah.
And this is one that you'd be good to pick this one with your scissors. You can see the hold fast there.
Yeah.
And you could put some of that in the bath. You find lots of people who are using seaweed in the beauty industry will use this one, which is a serrated wrack.
Why do they use that? What's good about it?
I suppose I should know the answer to that, but I don't. I do pick it and use it in my bath.
and it makes you feel good.
It makes me feel good, and it's got a lovely stickiness to it that makes me think, oh, this must be doing me good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is the one that the seaweed baths in Ireland use. And it's easy to identify because it doesn't have any of the bladders, like the bladder rack. Ascophyllum nodosum, and that's the one with the egg rack, the big fat bladders. We should see some of that on the way back.
The water's actually quite warm, isn't it?
This is why it's my favourite beach. But as my daughter said, you can't really swim there. So I say, well, you can scull. So we have 20 minutes before the tide comes in.
Right, okay.
And my husband's always talking about a slack tide. Yeah, it's fine, it's a slack tide. Well, I don't trust the slack tides, you know. I think I must be
a little bit more cautious. Slow?
Well, I think it means a time when you can still carry on seaweeding and you're not going to get into danger, but I think I'm more cautious than him. I always look at what the time that the tide is going to turn, and that's when I start going back. That's the time when you get the spooks, though, because that's when they get excited and think, oh, the tide's coming in, and they pop up, and then you grab them.
They pop up with excitement.
Yeah. If we aim for where those gulls, are they gulls or oyster catchers? And then walk across that bit.
Okay.
And then there are some rocks over the back there, which we can see on the way back, which I think, well, there is pepper dulse over here, but we can pick some pepper dulse there. That's the seaweed they call the truffle of the sea.
Ooh, sounds posh.
I think the chefs like it. How you pick that one sustainably, I really don't know, because it's a tiny seaweed. It reminds me of a fern. So you've got your scissors, and quite often in the Outer Hebrides it's freezing cold, and you can't use scissors and gloves. Well, I can't very well. So it's very difficult to actually cut it. So how the chefs get it, I don't know. And it dries away to nothing.
But you do this at all times of year. We're in July at the moment, so it should be warm.
Yeah, I've got a wetsuit and I've got jelly shoes on today. But in the winter I wear welly boots. The downside of welly boots, they're not very good on rocks.
No,
but then if you wear walking boots, you can't get them wet. So, the wetsuit's a good idea, though.
And is there a good crop to be had all year round?
It's just like the terrestrial vegetable. The seaweed has a season. It's ahead of the game, though. In January, I can start picking sea spaghetti, and you get lots of new growth of other seaweed. I mean, it's common sense that if you're cooking sea spaghetti, which looks like a noodle, in January, that it's going to cook quite quickly. Whereas the sea spaghetti we're going to go and pick, it doesn't turn the vibrant green when you chuck it in the pot in July and August. But when you pick the brown seaweed in January, and you really only need to put a kettle of water over it, I think it's amazing. And it tastes delicious, but if you were cooking spinach, you know, by the time the end of the summer comes, it's got that sort of vein down the middle and you're picking around the sides of it.
Yeah.
And where the young spinach leaf you treat in a different way. So I don't know why I was so dense, but it did take me quite a long time to realise that seaweed has a season. And like the terrestrial vegetable, you will cook it in a different way at different times of the year.
And you really are self-taught as well. You found some books as part of your research because you've written extensively about seaweed, but a lot of this is trial and error.
Yeah, a lot of it is trial and error. But foraging, my foraging full stop is trial and error. I like the smell of rowan blossom, so I thought, oh, that'd be nice in a cordial. But I think it tastes disgusting.
I'm not sure I do like the smell of rowan blossoms. I always think they're a bit sickly.
Well, do you know, it's interesting, isn't it? You know, when I first started making cordials, I did as I was told. I picked them when the sun was shining. And today, it was raining earlier on, and I picked some Rosa rugosa petals and chucked them in the blender, wet from the rain. I think they still tasted and were quite scented.
Totally. So, I can vouch for that.
Who knows? Maybe I have a theory that we just kind of think that people in days of yore knew more than us because we don't forage. But there's lots to learn. Right.
It's just nice to be in the water though, isn't it? Must be good for us.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, up to our knees in seawater.
It needs to be on the doctor's prescription list.
Yeah.
Especially here.
And the seaweed itself, is it very good for you?
Well, I'm married to a GP and he spent a little bit of time researching the nutrition element for my book. And I think what he would say is we have to be a little bit careful because scientists like things to be evidence-based.
Yes.
And as I've learnt from the cooking, some carrageens will give me a better set in the kitchen than others. So if you're drying seaweed, what happens to the nutrients as it dries? And, you know, if you're not privileged enough to go and forage your own, I mean, it's difficult. Not everyone lives by the sea and it's tide-related and the weather might be so awful that even I don't want to go out. So you are going to go and experiment maybe with dried seaweed. Do we know from a nutritional point of view what happens? You know, is it better to eat fresh seaweed? I think the research will be there soon, but I'm not sure that it's hard packed yet.
You're being very rational about that.
Well, I don't cook with seaweed because I think it's good for me. I cook with seaweed because it's here and it's available and I love going and collecting it. And it is quite tasty.
And it's very beautiful to look at, a lot of it.
Do you see these seaweed?
So this is long threads. They look like long worms. So, is this a sea spaghetti?
No, well, that's why I pointed out. This is cordophyllum. Can you see the holdfast on that? That's on a little shell, isn't it? It's growing on a shelf. And this doesn't taste very good. The good thing about seaweed is they're not poisonous.
So you can just try.
Yeah, you might go bleh. But the reason I've drawn your attention to it is if you looked at that, you could think, oh, I found sea spaghetti. But when we see the sea spaghetti, you'll see that the frond divides. I said, you know, and that when I first wrote the seaweed book, I told people to cut it way above the holdfast, thinking that everything grows at the holdfast. But I've since been told by a lovely lady called Tracy Begg, who happens to live in North Uist but works for SNH and is the real seaweed queen. And she's been really helpful. And she told me that actually when you're harvesting sea spaghetti, you cut it above the frond divide because that the growing part is actually at the divide. You'll see that one just about.
I suppose it's a similar thing with gardening, isn't it? With roses, things like that.
But do you know, I think foraging is like gardening. That grows on you.
Yeah.
And with the foraging, you know, you start and you learn a little bit here and suddenly you think, well, yes, I know that, but I've probably got an awful lot more to learn, but get out there, it's all there, and it's free too.
Well, we've nearly made it to the rock. This is so exciting.
So, if you're feeling brave,
yeah,
can you see the sea spaghetti?
Oh, yes.
Right. I've got seaweed, I've got Spaghetti Junction, you know Birmingham? It's round the back of the rock.
Okay, let's keep going.
But we have to be a little bit careful, because it's a neap tide. It's not I mean, it's okay. We're out at my seaweed rock. And sometimes when I've come out here, it will be up to my chest. So it's not that bad a tide. But you do have to watch how the tide comes in. It's around the back of the rock.
I don't mind getting wet. I just don't want my equipment to get wet.
Bizarre. Can you see how here?
It's a little bank, isn't there? There's some oyster catchers on it.
There are spoots on there.
Ooh. Is that what they're after, do you think?
Possibly. This is carrageen. And at this time of year, this has got other things growing on it, but I just pull it all off. Anyway, shall we head round to the junction?
Before it's too late.
Yeah.
And seaweeding was actually a term at one time.
Yeah.
And a popular pastime amongst Victorian women.
Yes, and there I am thinking, oh, this is a great idea, go outside, seaweeding and breathe is my, you know, mantra. And yet, over 100 years ago, ladies were out collecting seaweed specimens, which they would then press and send off to male professors. But some of these seaweed ladies wrote books, so it wasn't totally a male domain, but...
And I suppose that is part of the tradition because there were of women actually being botanical artists.
Yes. One of the interesting things I discovered when I was finding out more and more about these ladies is quite often they were married to a vicar. So I don't know if having a large manse or vicarage help them dry their species out, gave them plenty of space. I don't know, but one particular lady, Margaret Gatty, writes of taking... I mean, she lived in landlocked Yorkshire, so it was quite a big deal for her to get to the seaside, but she took the servants and the kids, and they all went seaweeding. And then she wrote about it. So just around the corner here, we have... my spaghetti junction.
Oh, the water's particularly warm here, isn't it?
It's beautiful, isn't it? So these are the kelps. This is Laminara digitata. And there are two kelps. There's a hyperborea, which kind of stands to attention. And this one bends over at low tide. On these kelps, you find the dulse, the red seaweed, that grows as an epiphyte. So if you were going to be using seaweed in the kitchen, you wanted to be cooking with dulse, you'd come out at a very low tide, and then you could either find dulse growing on the rocks, which in Angus, there's a lot of it growing. What's the castle near you? Near Stonehaven.
Donata.
Yep. And then at Auchmithie.
Yeah.
Actually, foragers shouldn't do this because these places are going to get inundated with foragers.
Okay. I won't tell anyone, but this is
but
good.
But you'll find it on the rocks, and you'll also find dulse growing as an epiphyte on these kelps.
Now, here we are. Lots of sea spaghetti.
Loads of it. And sadly, we have to stop because my experience tells me we'll be swimming around that corner.
Okay.
It would seem obvious just to walk around the rock,
but
you can't, sadly. So there's lots of sea spaghetti. I've got some scissors here.
Yeah. So this is the big kelp at the edge here then.
Yes.
And that's big, thick, rubbery looking stuff.
And that is dulse, which is actually a red seaweed.
But you can see
it's gone green.
And that's just because of the season.
Because of the season. Can you see these buttons?
They look almost like mushrooms.
Well, having said that, you need to... leave the holdfast. I have tried pickling some of these, or early in the season I've added these to a salad. When
and what are they?
Well, this is the holdfast of the sea spaghetti.
Ah. And really, this is just like a long mane belonging to this rock, isn't it?
So what else have we got here? Now, interestingly enough, on this kelp we've got one of the alva species growing, which is the gutweed, which has a horrible name, or that we probably will see some sea lettuce as well. When you cook seaweed, when you cook this brown seaweed, the sea spaghetti or the sugar kelp, it'll go green. So you've got some culinary magic in there. Now, the green seaweeds, for cooks that are interested in things like this, that remains green.
Okay.
So I'll give you a seaweed biscuit with different seaweeds in, and you'll see with the green one if it has the parsley effect.
Yeah.
And it's also, I don't know if you want to try that, it's quite a strong flavour.
It seems appropriate to try it out here. Wow.
It's strong, isn't it?
Mm, but it's the texture more than anything. It's like a film texture.
Yeah, I must admit, I tend to dry this one and use it as you would a condiment, as a sprinkle, so... It's a bit salty too.
Hmm.
Carrageen here. So you could pick this and dry it and use that as your setting agent. I just think we probably should stop wandering back.
It does feel like it's getting higher, this water. All of a sudden.
We'll be swimming. Yeah.
With my microphone out the water.
If you come out here earlier in the summer, though, the colours are just amazing. At the moment, the red seaweeds seem to have been bleached green.
Because of
the sun. And it has been really hot on Uist. But it is just so beautiful. I think, you know, when I rehydrate carrageen, you sort of look at it and you think, that is so beautiful. I want to use it in a picture. You could do lots of lovely artwork with seaweed. And it's got the natural, the lighter seaweeds, they stick, because I've tried this, to paper or card without any glue, because they've got the gelatinous alginate in them.
Well, I think for me, part of it, obviously being able to eat it is a massive bonus, but it's just being here. We're almost at the opposite, the middle of the causeway to Eriskay, up to our knees in warm seawater, surrounded by rocks, with this huge array of seaweed all around us, and it's just magic.
Why would you want to go anywhere else for a holiday? Beautiful.
I can see why you spend a lot of time coming out here and doing this. And actually having the seaweed gives it purpose, doesn't it?
I think the thing about foraging is from a sustainability point of view, foragers need to be reined in, because all they need to take is enough for supper. And the times I've been out here and I think, oh, what am I going to do with this seaweed? Who would like some? It is just getting that element into perspective. But just being outside, time to think, but as you say, with a sense of purpose. Fortunate people.
Thanks so much to forager Fee Bird for taking me out on that beautiful day seaweeding. I'll never forget that. Get in touch with us. We always love to hear from you, especially when you share where you listen to us. It makes us feel truly global. Out of doors at bbc.co.uk. Thanks for listening.